This is your AEW and New Japan Forbidden Door review. I am the Solemn Monster. It is officially Monday morning, June 27, 2022. A pay-per-view that, in a lot of ways, seemed cursed. All the injuries and just all the different people that had to be pulled from the card and matches that Tony Khan had wanted to book. And then, you know, this person was out hurt and this person was sick and this person, you know, politically couldn't be used. There's so many different things going on that it just felt like a cursed show. But when they first announced this pay-per-view months ago, I was very excited because the prospect of having an interpromotional event between two of the biggest companies in the world sounds like a lot of fun to me. I'm sure it's a nightmare to put together, but I've been looking forward to this show for a while, and tonight you saw why. If you saw this pay-per-view, you saw why. Because when this show is over, and I put the message up on Twitter, and I stand by what I said, I'm sure it's going to get a ton of different feedback. But I believe this is so far, and we're already halfway into 2022, I believe this is the best show of the year. And I say that as somebody who enjoyed WrestleMania this year. I thought this was one of the better WrestleManias that we've had in a very long time. I thought WrestleMania was a very good show. But this, to me, top to bottom, as far as the main card is concerned, there was not a single bad match on the entire show. I was never bored. I had fun with it from beginning to end. And the really great stuff was really great. And they had a lot of different appearances from a lot of big names. Despite all the big names who could not be on the card tonight, I was very surprised that CM Punk did not make a cameo, even just to do commentary for the main event. There was no CM Punk on the show. They were in Chicago. They were at the United Center. And I know he just had surgery recently, but no CM Punk. No Bryan Danielson. He did not appear either. And even some of the New Japan stars, I don't know why, you know, Naito, for example, was not on the show. Kenny Omega was not able to come back in time from his injuries. And despite all of that, you know, this was a card that still was very star heavy. You know, we had Jon Moxley in the main event against Tanahashi. We had Okada. We had Jay White. We had Hangman Page. We had Will Ospreay, who was one of the very best in the world, and he showed why tonight here on this show. But we had great matches. We had some great moments, including the debut of Cesaro, who is all elite. Claudio is all elite. I said I'm going to be very disappointed if it was anybody but him in that match with Zack Sabre Jr. And he came out and he got the reaction of the night. That place went crazy. I don't think that building has heard a reaction like that since CM Punk walked out last August when he came back in that very same building. And I'm sure for him it had to be very, very satisfying to get that kind of reaction. You could tell when the match was over and he was looking in the camera and he was saying thank you. He was saying thank you because you could tell it meant a lot to him to come out there and to get that kind of reaction. And I was very happy for him because he is somebody who, whether you believe he should be a world champion or always in main events, he's always somebody who I felt like was not in the mix enough. Even though he had a nice career for himself in WWE, you know, multiple-time tag team champion, didn't really have a lot of singles titles. You know, when I was talking about him, when his contract expired and he parted ways with WWE, I was very surprised that I think it was a very brief period of time that he had the U.S. title many, many, many years ago and never held any singles titles, never even challenged for the world title until last year. He had that one pay-per-view main event against Roman Reigns. And I always said, you know, whatever you think of the guy, if you don't think he's the most exciting or whatever, the guy is a freak of nature. He can do things in that ring that wow people. How they never booked a match with him and Brock Lesnar. Of course, Brock would win, but that's not the point. How they never, for all the years they were together in the same company, never thought to book that match is something I will never understand. And there were a lot of missed opportunities with him. We don't have to get into all that. Now he turns the page and he starts a new chapter. And he is the newest member of the Blackpool Combat Club. Jon Moxley is the new AEW interim world champion. He beat Tanahashi in the main event. I don't think it's that much of a surprise because Tanahashi is going back to Japan. He's got to go get ready for the G1. Now when CM Punk is ready to come back, Jon Moxley will have a title. CM Punk will have a title. and they've got a ready-made program. But Jon Moxley becomes the first ever two-time AEW World Champion. We're going to get into all the matches here on this card. I'm going to try not to die here during... oh, my God. During the review, you guys know what I'm going through. I talked about it on the podcast earlier, but I wasn't sure if we were going to go live tonight, but I said, what the hell? I had so much fun with that show. I'm all amped up. Can't go to bed right now anyway, so... But bear with me if I don't sound like I'm at my best. They also made an announcement tonight. They did announce that Dynamite Grand Slam is coming back Wednesday, September 21st. They're coming back to Arthur Ashe Stadium right here in New York. They had 20,000 people there last year. It was their biggest show and still remains their biggest show in terms of attendance in AEW history. I don't know what the final attendance number I don't know what the final attendance number is for tonight. I don't think they hit 20. It's probably in the 17 range, 17 to 18. So this might be number two. But Arthur Ashe is still their biggest attended show. And they're going to be coming back in September. So that was very cool to hear. Hit that like button. Hit that like button. Super chats are open. I will read all of your messages a little bit later on here in the stream. I don't want to keep you guys all night. So we're going to zip on through this as more people file on in. Was it 16? It was probably in the 16 to 17,000 range. Well, let's hope I don't lose my voice. Let's start with the buy-in. We got the buy-in pre-show. Open with Excalibur and Taz, joined by Kevin Kelly on commentary representing New Japan. Now, I had heard Kevin Kelly flat out said on Twitter that he was going to be part of this show. So I already knew that, but there was no indication of whether or not it was going to be for a few matches, if it was going to be for the entire card. As it turned out, he was part of the announce team for the entire show. And I think Kevin Kelly is probably the best play-by-play announcer right now, at this moment, in all of wrestling, at any of the major promotions. I've always enjoyed his New Japan work, and especially when he was together with Don Callis, in particular. I thought they made a great combo. But when you compare it to WWE and you compare it to even AEW, to me, Kevin Kelly is probably my number one. So it was very cool to hear his voice on the show tonight. And I thought the announce crew worked very well together. So they had Justin Roberts and the ring announcer from New Japan, Takuro Shibata. Not the only Shibata that we would have on the show tonight, by the way. They were doing bilingual introductions for each match. QT Marshall was the first one through the Forbidden Door. So he'll be a trivia question one day when you ask the question, who was the first person to go through the Forbidden Door? QT Marshall. And he was out there with Aaron Solo to take on Hirooki Goto and Yoshihashi. Goto was one win away. Only a week or two ago, he was one win away from challenging for the interim AEW World Championship. All he had to do was beat Tanahashi at Dominion. He couldn't do it. But instead, he was here on the pre-show. QT hit his QT special dive out to the floor. And it looked rough, and they said he rarely does it. And Kevin Kelly, I mean, he just read my mind. If I was doing commentary, I would have made the exact same comment. As soon as, I think it was Excalibur, said that he rarely does the move, Kevin Kelly said I could see why. So, yeah, I think he should leave that one to one of his students. QT later tried for a 450, but Yoshihashi moved out of the way. He made the tag to Goto, and he took out Marshall with the Ushigoroshi, and he and Hashi hit a combination neckbreaker for the win. You know, QT did more than you would expect here. I'll give the guy credit. He had his working shoes on. He was out there. He knew that he was in a big spot. You know, he's probably very happy to be on the show. Look, nobody likes QT Marshall. So he got more heat than anybody in this match. I will say that. He got more heat than anybody in this match. They added a fourth buy-in match that was previously not announced with Lance Archer against Nick Camarado. Archer is the one AEW name in the G1 this year. Of course, he spent many years in New Japan. This just felt like a way for them to give them an excuse to talk about the fact that Archer is going to be in the G1, and also probably just to give him a spot on the show, you know, just to, as somebody who wrestled so long for New Japan, they probably wanted to do something nice and said, let's try to get him a spot on the show. That's what this felt like to me. And, you know, they had a hoss fight, two big guys. Archer won with the blackout. Not much to it. Clark Connors was interviewed in the back by Alex Marvez, who just always, he always just looks so awkward when they cut to him. He looks like a deer in headlights. He's been with them now for like 3 years. You would think he would have gotten a little more comfortable at this. I mean, I know he, you know, he's a writer. He's been a writer and a journalist for so many years. Not everybody necessarily translates well on the TV side. He just still seems so, I don't know, awkward when they cut to him in these backstage interview segments. But anyway, so he's in the back with Clark Connors, who lucked into a match on the show tonight because Tomohiro Ishii suffered a knee injury. And so Connors was going to be part of the All-Atlantic four-way championship match. So he's interviewing Clark Connors, and he said he was there to break the forbidden door off its hinges. He said he would show everybody what he means when he says, oh my God. I told you, I'm going to try not to die here on the stream. But he said he's going to show everybody what he means when he says, let's get wild. But the way that he said this was anything but wild. I mean, he could not have, come across as any less unconvincing. Talking is clearly not his strong suit or mine tonight, evidently. But later on, I think he also turned a lot of heads in the match. So he let his talking be done in the ring. But as far as this segment here, this was no wins. We had Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland against Yoshinobu Kanemaru and El Desperado. Thank you, Motown. Thank you, Motown Slim. I appreciate that. So we had Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland. They've had some issues recently on TV. Would they explode? Would those issues come to a head here in this match? That was really the only question. It was the only reason why I had changed my prediction and gone with the New Japan team here. Because I thought this might be the end of the team. You know, this loss might be what triggers the split, and that did not happen. This was the best thing on the buy-in, and it wasn't even close. And there wasn't a lot of good stuff on the buy-in, so this was really the only good thing, if we're being honest. I mean, the opener, again, it wasn't terrible, but this was the only thing worthwhile on the entire pre-show. Lee and Swerve, they had issues here in this match as well. Strickland accidentally dropkicked Keith Lee in the knee at one point. And so that was the story of the match here. Kanemaru and Despy, they were working over Lee's leg for a while. There was a good near fall when Desperado, he took a swig of his Jack Daniels, his whiskey. I think it's Jack Daniels. And he spat it in Lee's face, rolled him up, but Lee kicked out at 2.5. The finish was wild. The finish was why Swerve Strickland is, he's something else here. So Swerve kicked Desperado out of the ring, but Desperado was hanging by his feet. So he had fallen out of the ring, he's hanging by his boots, and all of a sudden, Swerve, he propels himself out over the top rope, and he lands with a double stomp on Desperado. Words don't do it justice. He's so smooth in what he does. I know this is going to come as a shock to so many of you, but Swerve Strickland is really good at this pro wrestling. And he popped the entire house with that move. Inside the ring, Lee hit the Big Bang Catastrophe on Kanemaru for the win. After the match was over, Powerhouse Hobbs and Ricky Starks, they spoke from up in one of the luxury boxes. Hobbs said that Strickland and Lee called themselves Shaq and Kobe. And then he compared himself and Ricky Starks to Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, since they were in Chicago. Starks took the microphone and said that Lee and Swerve will never compare to them, and Starks questioned how Strickland and Lee could call themselves the best tag team when they haven't beaten him and Hobbs yet. So it sounded like this was the setup maybe for a TV match. I don't know if it'll be this week or not between these two teams. Lee and Swerve, they really should get a shot at the Young Bucks once before they split up. I don't think they're going to win the belts, but they should at least have that one match with the Bucks and challenge for the titles. And if they're going to do the split, maybe if they lose there, that could be what does it. It would be a shame to break them up right now just because they're a really good team. And I'd like to see the Young Bucks have a couple of matches against, you know, some new teams that we haven't seen them in the ring with. So if these two teams do face off, I would imagine Lee and Swerve maybe win, and then maybe they do get a match with the Bucks at some point. I don't know where they are in the rankings or anything, because, I mean, I hardly pay attention to those. But, again, this was the best thing on the entire pre-show. And it's funny, you know, I did see somebody in the chat mention they were very upset that Meltzer spoiled who the mystery man was going to be in the Zack Sabre Jr. match, like right before. I think, and I actually saw that tweet because I was just periodically checking my timeline, and I happened to check, and he posted something, and he said, "Claudio's in the building." And I kind of like, I already knew. Like, I didn't know, but I knew it had to be him. So I wasn't too upset, but I saw that, and I said, "Really? Why the fuck would you post that? Why the fuck would you post that?" And it's funny to me because there are people who will criticize, not just Meltzer, but some of the wrestling media online. Well, how come you always spoil WWE stuff, but you guys don't spoil AEW stuff? Well, that was a pretty big AEW spoiler. I don't know why he tweeted that. So I can understand why some people would be upset. I don't understand why he tweeted that either. I thought that was a pretty fucking stupid thing for him to tweet. So we had Max Caster and the Gun Club against Yuya Urimura, Alex Coughlin, Kevin Knight, and the DKC from the New Japan LA Dojo. In his rap, on his way to the ring, Caster worked in some digs at all the recent injuries. He mentioned Shibata's balls, because, of course, he's the lead coach at the LA Dojo where all these guys trained. So he mentioned Shibata's balls, and he worked in a hentai mention. There you go. There's your Max Caster rap. They cut to a Danhausen video who said that he had a gift for them. This, I don't know where the fuck this came from. All of a sudden, there's a Danhausen video. And he's got a gift for the Gun Club. So they put Danhausen's video up on the screens. And there's like this custom, I guess it's new, like some kind of custom theme song for the Ass Boys or whatever it starts playing. And Austin and Colton Gunn, they make a beeline to the back, I guess, to go find Danhausen. So they run to the back, and they leave their father and Billy Gunn's other son in the ring all alone to die. So I don't know what the hell that was all about. I don't know what Danhausen has to do with any of this. We never saw them again. So maybe the Gunn boys fell into a well. You know, maybe they got kidnapped by somebody. Who knows? Samoa Joe's ninjas from the Impact Wrestling days? I don't know. But we never saw them again. Caster fought from underneath. He eventually got the tag to Billy Gunn, who hit the Famouser to Coughlin, then made the tag to Caster, who went up top of the mic drop elbow, and he picks up the win for his team. This was a handicap match, is what this was, and the AEW guys still won. I'm sure New Japan doesn't mind, because the other four, they're like young lions. I mean, these guys are you know, barely, I can't even call them stars. You know, maybe one day they will be, but they're not there yet. But still a little weird. The AEW guys went over here four against two. So AEW ends the buy-in up 3-1 over the New Japan crew. And that led into the main card. And as I said at the beginning of the review, not a single bad match on the entire main card. Some matches were better than others, but I can't sit here and tell you that there was a bad match. Like, oh, you should avoid that. Or this match sucked. You know, there was an unfortunate ending to the IWGP title match, which we'll get into. Although I think that has to do with a legitimate injury. So, again, we'll get to that a little bit later. But the pay-per-view opened with Chris Jericho, Sammy Guevara, and Minoru Suzuki, Murder Grandpa, against Eddie Kingston, Wheeler Yuta, and Shota Umino. Suzuki got his own entrance to Kazaninare. Everybody sang along. It was lovely. They showed highlights of Jericho's match at the Tokyo Dome with Kenny Omega when he shoved down the referee, Red Shoes Uno. This is going back about 4 years now. And his son, Shota, who was a young boy at the time, is right there, and he's trying to, you know, protect his father and check up on his father, and then Jericho shoves him down and puts him in the Walls of Jericho out in the crowd on the floor. So I like that they kind of brought it back to that, and they showed us those highlights. John Moxley was originally going to have the Wheeler Yuta spot in this match. That was the original plan, which is quite a different plan than the way it worked out. So Moxley went from curtain jerking the show to headlining the show. He got a nice upgrade there when Punk got hurt. Because the main reason is because Shota, or Shooter, as Moxley would call him, Moxley kind of took the kid under his wing. You know, when he would go over there and work in Japan and everything, it became like a comedy thing with him and Shooter. So that was the plan. It was going to be Moxley and Shooter and Eddie Kingston. They were going to be partners here in this match. But it just, it worked out a different way. So Kevin Kelly said that Umino should be a main event talent in New Japan one day. And after this match, I believe it. I think he absolutely has the potential to be a top star one day in that company. We saw glimpses of it here in this match. This was an excellent opener. I thought Yuta was over big in Chicago, but really all of these guys were. Eddie Kingston was over. Suzuki was over. In the end, the one who got put over the most, though, I thought was Umino. So Jericho started with Yuta. He hit 6 rolling German suplexes to Jericho right out of the gate. People were into Wheeler Yuta. And he locked on a crossface. That got quickly broken up by Sammy Guevara. Both teams start brawling all around ringside. And Umino hit Suzuki with forearms. No effect. Umino kept looking over at Suzuki. You know, all the beatings that Minoru Suzuki would give him back in the day when he was a young boy. He hasn't forgotten about those. Because as Kevin Kelly said when Suzuki came out, make sure you don't make eye contact. That's all you need to know. When Suzuki is walking to the ring, do not make eye contact. A lot of people have made that mistake before. Kingston and Suzuki, they had the exchange of chops. You knew at least one of these matches would have this spot. This was the match. So they're chopping each other, and it looked like Eddie was winning the exchange. He backed Suzuki into the corner. He started laying in the machine gun chops. Suzuki starts no-selling it. He's got this look on his face like he's possessed. And Eddie Kingston realizes, I've made a terrible mistake. And he's chopping him, and it's having no effect. All it took was one forearm shot by Minoru Suzuki to knock down Eddie Kingston. So I love that spot. We can see 50 chops, right? They have no effect. One forearm. And down goes Eddie Kingston. Umino hit Jericho with an over-the-shoulder power slam. I think it was off the middle rope or the top rope. Middle rope for a near fall. On the floor, Ty Conti and Wheeler Yuta, they got into an argument. And Sammy Guevara was able to blindside Yuta. He hit the GTH. Kingston hit Jericho as he was going for his lion salt, and Umino got another near fall. Sammy caught Umino with a shot to the back with a baseball bat, but Jericho still was not able to put the kid away. Umino locked on his own Walls of Jericho. Place went nuts. Sammy hit him with a super kick, but he would not let go of the hold. And again, people cheered. So he rocked him with a second super kick. He still didn't let go, but he did fall down. He did fall to his knees. And Suzuki took out Kingston with the Gotch-style pile driver. That left Umino all alone. 1-3. He managed to dispose of Suzuki, he disposed of Sammy Guevara, but then he walked into the Judas effect. And Chris Jericho pinned him. That win gives Jericho's team the man advantage on Wednesday on Dynamite in the Blood and Guts match. This was a hell of a match, and I agree with Kevin Kelly. Again, I think young Shooter here has a very bright future ahead of him in New Japan. But, yeah, look, his father is going to have to recuse himself from his matches. So if he's headlining one day, you know, in the Tokyo Dome, Red Shoes can't be the referee. And there's a little conflict of interest there. That wouldn't be fair. But later in the show, Jericho interrupted what was supposed to be a Tony Schiavone interview with Umino in the back. And he told him, look, kid, you earned my respect tonight. You knew Jericho was full of shit, right? So Parker and Menard are there, and so now they're talking to Umino, and when Umino turns around, he gets a fireball right in the face. And Jericho walks off. So, I'm telling you, that is a Wrestle King. I'll make a statement right now. That is a Wrestle Kingdom match. It might not be next year, but if not, it could be the year after. That's going to be a Wrestle Kingdom match one day. Because Jericho's already wrestled all the real big money guys, and Jericho's a lot older now. It was a nice novelty when he went back to New Japan. He had the match with Kenny. That did real business. I mean, real business. And that match that he had with Omega at the Tokyo Dome, Tony Khan has said, was really the genesis of what eventually would become AEW. He credits that match with what eventually would lead to the formation of this company. So that was a very important match, and it made a lot of money. And we went on to see Jericho wrestle Evil, and he wrestled Naito, I believe, and Tanahashi. You know, he's pretty much covered all the key, like really key guys. So if Jericho's going to go back over there at some point, and that's the big if Jericho does go back at some point to Japan, who does he wrestle? He's got this story with Umino that goes back to the first Wrestle Kingdom match with Omega. This was just a continuation of their story. That's why I say one day there's going to be a Wrestle Kingdom, and it's not going to be a main event, but there'll be a Wrestle Kingdom match with these two. And maybe Jericho puts him over. They think this kid's going to be the next big thing. Jericho might want to get in there and say, look, let me put him over. Let me take credit for being the one to put this guy over. I could see that happening. Bobby Cruz did the ring introductions for the next match, since the Ring of Honor tag team titles were on the line, as well as the IWGP tag team titles. Winner take all, Jeff Cobb and Great O'Khan. They are the IWGP champions, FTR, the Ring of Honor tag team champions, and Trent Beretta and Rocky Romero of Roppongi Vice. Caprice Coleman joined on commentary, so we got a reunion with him and Kevin Kelly, who used to do Ring of Honor shows together. And FTR got a huge reaction coming out, as they do really every time we see them on TV. When that music hits, people pop. People love FTR. Yeah, Herschel, you know, I was going to actually make that point a little bit later when I saw Rick Knox in the ring. I saw Rick Knox and I rolled my eyes, but it was noticeable that there were no New Japan officials on the show. Red Shoes or any of the other ones. I guess they didn't fly them over. That was surprising. I don't know why. I don't know why they wouldn't have had at least one of their key referees there, but yeah, there were none on the show. So early in the match, Dax Harwood sold an injury to his shoulder. This was very early in the match. And he rolled out to the floor. And if it wasn't a legitimate injury, he did a very good job of convincing me that it was. Maybe he tweaked something or whatever. The trainer came over, was talking to him, and then they went to the back. And look, with all the injuries that they've been besieged by, the first thing people are going to think is, oh, shit, not another one. Right? Maybe that's the effect that they were going for. I don't have an update on Dax. If it was an injury and they just played it into the match, given that he came back out, FTR went on to win. I'm going to assume, obviously, it was just part of the story. Could he have legitimately been hurt? Maybe it wasn't so serious. Of course, anything's possible. But I don't think he was actually hurt here. But he went to the back. And so that left Cash Wheeler all by himself, without a partner. And so when Wheeler had to make a tag, he had no choice. He tagged in Trent Beretta, even though he didn't want to. Why would he tag in Trent Beretta? Why would he tag anybody into the match that wasn't his partner? Because they could lose their Ring of Honor tag team titles, but he had no choice. The guy was being killed. So he tagged in Trent. Midway through the match, crowd comes alive. Here comes Dax. Here comes Dax the Axe coming back down to the ring. The shoulder is all taped up. Comes back in like the Valiant babyface. Wheeler makes the hot tag. Harwood ran wild with one arm. Ended up giving Cobb. Jeff Cobb is a 280-pound man, at least. He's a big boy. And he gave Jeff Cobb, with, you know, supposedly one good arm, three delayed German suplexes. Harwood and Beretta hit a double superplex to Cobb off the middle rope. Wheeler, as soon as Cobb landed, Cash Wheeler came off the top rope with a splash. It's like the Powerplex, the old Power and Gory. The old Power and Gory. Power and Glory Powerplex that we've seen FTR use before. So he comes off the top with the splash, tries for the win, only got 2.5. Beretta and Romero hit Strong Zero to Jeff Cobb. They had the titles won, but Wheeler dove in to break up the fall. Harwood tagged himself in. He got caught with an O'Connor roll, and the crowd really got on Paul Turner. They really got on referee Paul Turner here for what they thought was a botched three count. It was not a botched three count. There were so many people go, oh, that was three. Paul Turner, he sucks, and all this and that. It was not a three count. What happened is he counted one, and it looked like Rocky, he shifted position. So when he shifted position and he moved, he reset the count, and he started over again. The crowd, though, didn't know that, because if you're sitting in the 20th row, how the fuck are you supposed to know that, right? So I can understand the crowd's reaction, because to them, it looked and sounded like a three count, but it wasn't. So nobody was really at fault. It was just one of those things. It was one of those situations. But that's what happened. He had started counting. The guy moved. He reset the count. And then at 2.5, the guy kicked out. It was not a botch. It was not a three count. But to the crowd, they didn't know that. They didn't care. And they let Paul Turner have it. That's for sure. They let him have it on that one. After that, FTR hit the big rig out of nowhere to Rocky Romero and pinned him to win the IWGP Tag Team titles. They retained their Ring of Honor Tag Team titles. But that is their first career win with the IWGP belts. And, you know, Dax and Cash, I mean, they're wrestling savants. So to them, you know, that's a big deal. That's a real feather in their cap to win the IWGP belts with all the history in that promotion and in those championships and titles they've never held before. Now they are the IWGP, the Ring of Honor, and the AAA Tag Team Champions all at once. They are the true belt collectors. We went from Kenny Omega, the belt collector. Now we have FTR. They are the belt collectors. So this was another excellent match, and the career year for FTR continues, and in particular for Dax Harwood, but it's a career year for them collectively as a tag team as well. They have never had a better year in their lives in this wrestling business than what they are experiencing right now. There was a period of time last year where a lot of people were complaining about the fact that FTR were not getting opportunities and we were not getting to see them, and they lost to the Bucks and the Bucks were burying them and all this stuff, and we weren't seeing them a lot. And this year it has been a complete turnaround. And part of that was the babyface turn. The fans took to them. They were great heels. They were very like old school traditional wrestling heels in the way that they worked their matches and conducted themselves. But along the way, they just naturally got over with the audience. People liked them. And so they ran with it. They embraced it. And they are one of the most popular acts in the entire company. Like I said, they get a big reaction whenever they come out. You can always rely on them to go out there and have probably the best match, if not one of the best matches of the entire night, and give the people a show and give them something that they're going to walk away from feeling entertained by. And it doesn't matter what team you put them in the ring with. That's the thing. I mean, they work with so many different teams. They have titles now representing so many different promotions. You know, it's not even about the physical belts. You know, these are the belts that they're booked to win. Let's not lose sight of the fact that wrestling is work, right? No one really wins championships. You are given a championship. They could have 15 different titles. That in and of itself is not impressive. All it takes is a booker to go, hey, I'm going to make you my tag team champion, right? But what's impressive is that, again, they continue to go out there and knock it out of the park each and every single time. And because of that, they've been rewarded with all of these championships, which in turn are going to get them more opportunities. So to me, more belts for FTR means more FTR, which is good for everybody. And now things are set, if they want to pursue it, in September at Double or Nothing, or not Double or Nothing, but at All Out, you can set up the inevitable rematch with the Bucks for the AEW Tag Team titles. Can FTR win all the gold? Can they add the AEW Tag Team titles to the list? I could see a stipulation where If the Bucks win, they win all the gold. And if FTR wins, they win the AEW tag team titles. I think you want to get there, and I think you want to do that match. But then after that, it's time to get some new teams over. And I talked about that on the podcast a few weeks ago. To me, that's really the marquee match to do. But then I would love to see, you know, once Anthony Bowens is out of the wheelchair, you talk about teams that the fans have really taken to. I'd like to see the Acclaim get a real push. Every time we see the Acclaim, whether it's tag matches or singles matches, they always lose. I was shocked, right? Hey, Max Caster got a win tonight. Doesn't happen very often. At some point, I'd like to see that change because I think the Acclaimed could be AEW Tag Team Champions one day. They're a popular young team that has not been in that position before. So at some point when the Bucks and FTR are done with their program and they're done feuding with each other, it's time to get some new teams over. But I think it all out, that would be the match to do. Tony Schiavone was in the back to interview the IWGP World Champion Jay White and Juice Robinson, who is still in possession of the physical IWGP United States Championship, which belongs to Will Ospreay. Juice still has the belt because when he was stripped of the belt, he was out after a bout of appendicitis and he just never gave the belt back. So Jay White pointed out that Juice never actually lost the title, and Juice said that the match tonight, as far as he's concerned, with Ospreay and Orange Cassidy is a number one contenders match. So, and then we had the four-way. This is one of the matches I was most looking forward to on this show. Four-way to crown the very first ever All-Atlantic AEW champion with Malakai Black, Miro, Pac, and Clark Connors. Let me take some water here. What's Uffman thinks that FTR will drop all the belts before they win the AEW tag belts. All the belts. So you must think that they're not winning the AEW tag belts for a while, because I'm talking about September. I don't know about them losing all the belts before then. That's kind of a quick turnaround on that. Who is it? Someone mentioned the Good Brothers holding the Impact Tag Team title. Who cares? Who cares? Clark Connors looks like a jacked up Jungle Boy. So I'm the only one who noticed that when he was out there. He looks like if Jungle Boy was on the Jungle Juice, that is what it would look like. It would look like Clark Connors. If Jungle Boy hit the gym and was putting in the work there, he would look like this guy. So you had to know that Clark Connors was in this to take the losing fall, because none of these other guys really should have been pinned or made to submit in this match. Not Malakai, not Miro, and not Pac. So it was pretty obvious to me anyway that Clark Connors was going to be the one taking the losing fall. But he got a chance to shine. Late in the match, he got a chance to shine, and he really had the crowd into his comeback. Miro dominated the match early on, and Malakai pulled out a table. First bit of plunder that we had on the entire show. Now, that was one of the other things I actually liked, frankly, about this pay-per-view, is the fact that this was not a show that relied heavily on weapons and, you know, just garbage and thumbtacks and barbed wire. And because we see so much of that already, right? We have a pay-per-view next weekend called Money in the Bank, so we're going to get tons of ladders. And we had a pay-per-view called Hell in a Cell a few weeks ago, and we have Blood and Guts on TV this Wednesday. I mean, I feel like every week on AEW television is Blood and Guts. We see it so much. I'm kind of desensitized to it at this point. It was nice to have a pay-per-view, not a single gimmick match on the entire show. When I say gimmick, I mean cage, ladder, weapons, yeah, stuff like that. Not a single gimmick match on the entire show. This was the first time all night that any kind of real weapons, unless you count that baseball bat shot to Shooter's back in the opener, the first time we had any real weapons on this show. And it was just one table spot. It was propped up. Malakai pulled the table out. And he propped it up against the guardrail. And He and Miro were fighting over by the table, trying to put each other through the table at various points. It was Clark Connors, actually, who came out of nowhere and hit Miro with a spear and put Miro through the table, and he got all fired up, and the crowd was really into Clark Connors at that point. Back in the ring, Connors hit Black with a spinning power slam, then he caught Pac with a spear. He caught Pac with an inverted blue thunder bomb for a near fall. Connors ran into a super kick from Pac after Pac recovered, and Pac went for the Black Arrow, but Malakai caught him. This set up the superplex Tower of Doom spot in the corner. Miro was the one underneath, and so he powerbombed everybody. Miro tossed Malakai out, and Connors. He hit the Machka kick on Pac and locked on the game over submission. I thought this was it. I thought, you know, Pac was struggling. He was trying to make his way over to the ropes, and he got dragged right back into the middle because Miro was my pick to win the entire thing, and I thought, okay, this is it. This is the beginning of the end right here. But Pac held on, and Malakai got back in the ring, and he spat the black mist in Miro's eyes. And then he caught him with the black mask kick, and that took Miro out of the picture. And Black tried to lock Connors in some kind of a submission hold. And while he's got him locked in or trying to lock him into the submission, Pac goes up to the top. He hits a 450 splash on Malakai. And then he locks Clark Connors in the Brutalizer for the immediate tap out. And so Pac is the first ever AEW All-Atlantic Champion. No surprise that these four went out there and had an excellent match. Now, like I said, I had Miro as my pick, but I am not mad at that outcome at all. I am not unhappy with that outcome. Pac is great. And, you know, it's about time that he gets some recognition. I feel like he's just been... I know he's part of Death Triangle, but even still, he's been on the back burner for so long. And he would go through these periods where he would just disappear. I don't know if it was all injury-related or visa-related, where he would disappear for like months at a time. We just wouldn't even see him. I would almost forget he was even still with the company. But Pac is fantastic. Especially with, you know, once he started picking up that... he went heel in WWE and he started picking up that attitude. And, you know, he lays his shit in. I mean, obviously, he's not physically the biggest guy in the world, but he looks great, right? He lays his shit in. He's got the best-looking top rope finisher in all of wrestling in the Black Arrow. I said that when he was still using it in WWE. The thing's a fucking work of art. So it's about time that, you know, he gets more recognition and they do something with him. And so even though I think this is a completely unnecessary title, I still don't quite understand why they felt that they had to introduce this championship. They already have trios titles that have been made. Tony Khan said the belts are already made. They're just waiting to introduce them. I would have introduced the trios titles. I don't think the All-Atlantic title was necessary. But now that they have, you know, now that they have introduced it, I like the fact that Pac now has a title. And if anything, maybe we'll get to see him, you know, doing more on TV. I don't know what the plan is as far as defending that title as just another belt. Or, you know, is he going to be traveling the world at other independent shows and defending it? I don't know. I don't know what the plan is for this belt because it really is not necessary. But I'm glad that Pac has a title. And I was happy to see him get his moment here on the show. We had the Young Bucks and El Fantasmo, Bullet Club reunited for one night only. And they had in their corner Hikuleo, taking on Sting, Darby Allin, and Shingo Takagi. Hikuleo was in their corner and not in the match because Hiromu Takahashi had a fever, and he was not allowed to travel to the U.S., so the 8-man tag turned into a 6-man tag. Tony Schiavone came out to join the announce team so that he could yell Sting's name for his entrance, but they also brought him out for another reason, which I thought made sense. I think this might have been the only match he did commentary for, but... they brought him out, and he talked about the history of the Dudes with Attitudes name, because that's what Sting and Darby and Shingo were calling themselves, the Dudes with Attitudes. And on the podcast, I mentioned, oh, you know, it made me think of Shawn Michaels and Diesel. They called themselves the Two Dudes with Attitudes back in 95 when they were doing the tag team thing. And Schiavone mentioned something that I had completely forgotten about, which is that there was a Dudes with Attitudes faction in WCW. Back in 1990, around the time of the 1990 Great American Bash, And, you know, given that Sting was part of this match, he mentioned the fact that Sting was, you know, part of that group. It was Sting and Lex Luger and Junkyard Dog and Paul Orndorff, Rick Steiner, Elegante. I'd rather forget about Elegante. We have our own Elegante on television on Monday nights now. Well, he's a little bit better than Elegante. Nobody is worse than Elegante. I'm sure Elegante was a very nice man. Even the Great Khali. The Great Khali danced, right? At least the Great Khali, there was some kind of value in what, and I'm being very generous here, but there was some kind of value in what Khali brought to TV sometimes. Elegante had no business being in the ring. He had no business being on TV. And it was comical when they dressed him up in that furry costume with the furry crotch and they sent him out there to feud with The Undertaker. I'm sure The Undertaker wanted to fucking throw himself in the middle of traffic every day he woke up and realized, I got to work with this fucking guy. But Elegante was part of the Dudes with Attitudes as well. And I had totally forgotten about that. Every time I heard that name, I just thought of WWF 95, forgetting that in WCW with Sting back then. There was a history there. So they had Tony Schiavone explain that. Yes, for those who don't know, I keep saying Elegante. He was the Giant Gonzalez in WWF. If you are not familiar with his Elegante days from WCW, he was the Giant Gonzalez in WWF. That's when he had the furry crotch. So, you know, if he was using Manscaped, he wouldn't have had that issue. Anyway, they played Sting's music. And Tony Schiavone said his name, and there was no Sting. There was no Sting. He never came out. So instead, they went right to the entrance for the Bullet Club. And here come the Bucks and Phantasmo and Hikuleo. And then the lights go out. And then we see there's a spotlight up in the rafters with someone who is supposed to be Sting. It looked like there was a person up there dressed as Sting. Obviously, it wasn't Sting. And my heart sank for a second because I just thought, okay, they're not going to have him rappel from the ceiling, I hope. A month after they trotted Martha Hart out there on one of their pay-per-views. Thankfully, that didn't happen. The lights went out again. And when they came back on, Sting was on top of one of the entrance tunnels. I guess he had teleported. Or it was a diversion. And Sting was on top of one of the entrance tunnels. And he did a dive off the tunnel, and he wiped out all the Bullet Club members. Sting wasn't even waiting for the bell to ring, and this fucking guy is doing dives. He just loves doing dives. I can picture him waking up in the morning from bed. That's how he gets out of bed. He has to dive. He dives out of bed. He has taken a liking to diving. I can picture Sting, like, he's probably made a lot of really good money in his career. Maybe he's got a pool in his backyard, and he's got a diving board. And every day when he comes home from the road, he goes to his backyard, right? He's got his towel around his neck. He puts his towel down. He gets his flip-flops off. And he's doing dives into the deep end of the pool. So Sting wipes them all out. Darby catches Phantasmo with a code red. He got the tag to Shingo. Shingo came in. He took the fight to the Bucks, hit a Death Valley driver on Nick Jackson before tagging in Sting. And Phantasmo tried to give Sting the purple nurple. Sting no-sold it, hit a stinger splash. Hikuleo distracted the referee, and El Phantasmo low-blowed Sting. The Bucks gave Sting a super kick party, but Sting no-sold it. He got a monster pop. People love it when Sting just no-sells shit. And he took them both inside out with a pair of clotheslines. Sting got the tag to Darby, who went for the coffin drop, and Matt Jackson got his knees up. Bucks hit Darby with more bang for your buck, and Phantasmo came off the top with a splash for a near fall. The Bucks hit dives on Shingo and Darby on the floor, and Phantasmo followed that up with a rope walk moonsault onto the floor. Sting was teasing his own dive, and he hit the ropes, but as he came off the ropes, all three Bullet Club members slid into the ring, and they gave him a triple super kick. And down went Sting. And shout out to Michael Taylor, who just subscribed to the channel. Yes, if you are not subscribed, then please do hit that sub button. You will get a thumbs up from Asuka or maybe Sasha Banks. You never know. You never know who's going to pop up on screen. It could be Orange Cassidy. He's coming up next. So the Bucks went for the BTE trigger, but Sting ducked and they smashed their knees together. And Sting hit a double scorpion death drop on both Bucks. Phantasmo was in the ring, and so this was funny. Oh, my God. So, Sting gives them a double scorpion death drop. Matt Jackson rolls out to the floor on one side. Nick Jackson rolls out to the floor on the other. Phantasmo's in the ring, and he's celebrating, right? His back is turned. So he's thinking, oh, man, the Bucks are finishing this guy off. This is great. And it's very clear that the spot is going to be Phantasmo turning around and being shocked to find that Sting has downed the Bucks. And then Sting would do to Phantasmo whatever he's going to do to Phantasmo. Well, he turns around and he sees Sting, but Sting leaves the ring. Sting forgets the spot. He leaves the ring to go out after Nick Jackson. Nick Jackson looks up at him and yells something at him. And then Sting gets back into the ring, and at this point, Phantasmo, who already turned around and he saw what was going on, he had to turn back around and start dancing like a fool and pretending like he has no idea. Because Sting obviously forgot, he had a brain fart. Sting gets back in the ring, and Sting gives Phantasmo the purple nurple and delivers a low blow of his own. So he forgot the nipples is what happened here. He forgot the nipples. Sting forgot the nipples. We can give the guy a pass. Darby took out Hikuleo with a coffin drop to the floor, and then Shingo dropped Phantasmo with the last of the dragon for the three count and the win for the baby faces. That was a lot of fun. I thought this match was a lot of fun, and Sting, boy, you know, Sting is, he's something else, man. This guy's out of his mind. How can you not respect Sting? He doesn't have to be doing any of this. Like I said, he could just be enjoying his retirement back at home. I think he lives in Texas these days. He could be doing dives out in the pool every day. But he's out there. So he's working his ass off, and he's still over. He's still over. I'm saying that Sting and Darby pairing is one of the smartest things that Tony Khan ever did. We have Thunder Rosa against Toni Storm for the AEW Women's World Championship. These two had what I thought was a good match. I think my expectations may have been set a little high. But I thought they had a good match. And I like Rosa's face paint. I thought that was cool, the way she had her face paint done up here on this show. Rosa caught Toni with a leaping cutter and some diving drop kicks against the ropes. And Storm countered a Fire Thunder driver with a roll-up. Rosa rolled through and caught Toni with a double stomp, and Storm tried for a spinning DDT on the floor. Rosa, though, blocked it and hit a Northern Lights suplex. Storm caught her with a German suplex on the apron and then hit a spinning DDT on the floor. Back inside, Toni destroyed her with that hip attack. That hip attack looks like death. The way she comes into that corner, it's, you know, honestly, even like Andrade when he does the running knees in the corner. You know, it looks brutal. And when Toni throws herself in the corner like that, and they even showed a slow motion replay of it, I mean, she fucking wrecks them with that. So she gave the corner hip attack, got a near fall after that with a DDT. Rosa hit a running knee strike and a Death Valley driver. And then she planted Toni with the Fire Thunder driver, only got two, and she couldn't believe it. Rosa went for a kick, but Toni caught her with a German suplex, and Storm's left shoulder was hurting her. She could not hit her Storm Zero finish, or pile driver. Rosa won with Dustin Rhodes' final reckoning finish. She's talked about what an influence Dustin has been on her. Dustin was the first person in the ring when she won the title from Britt Baker in the cage match to congratulate her. He works with a lot of the women on the roster, and so that's the significance. That's the Dustin Rhodes tie-in there. So she used his finishing move to beat Toni Storm. Again, this was good stuff, and it was the right outcome. It would have been way too soon to take that title off of Thunder Rosa. I just hope they keep Toni Storm in the mix. You know, they've got talent. You know, that's not really the issue. And they might have more suit, depending on what happens with Sasha Banks. They might have even more quality talent coming into that women's division very soon. But you look, whether it's Thunder Rosa, whether it's Mercedes Martinez, Serena Deeb, Chris Statlander, Jade Cargill's not there yet, but she's getting there. She looks like a star. She's got all the tools to be, you know, the biggest thing in the entire company, let alone in that division in the next couple of years. But, you know, they just signed Athena, so they have her, Toni Storm. So, I mean, they have a lot of talent there, but it's just a matter of getting them the time and the attention on television, which has been a struggle. That's the question I have. I would hate for Toni Storm to just kind of go back to the back of the line, and we see her pop up on TV once every 6 weeks, and otherwise she's relegated to dark. So I don't want to see that. We had Will Ospreay against Orange Cassidy for the IWGP United States Championship. Jim Ross came out to do commentary. Actually, he came out and he stayed for the rest of the show. So Jim Ross came out, he did commentary for this match and all the matches that came after this. The other announcers, they were filling in some of the story here before the match, right before the bell rang. And JR just, he sounded annoyed and interrupted what Kevin Kelly and Excalibur and Taz were talking about. It just interrupted them. Again, like he was annoyed and said, well, how about we talk about the great wrestling that we're going to see in this match? And so right off the bat, I said, oh boy, we might have cranky JR tonight. But he settled down after that. So Cassidy did not come out to his independent theme song. I talked about this on episode 762 earlier today. Tony Khan has been working for a while now to secure the rights for Orange Cassidy to start using the song Jane by Jefferson Starship, which was the music that he used when he was wrestling on the indie scene. And that would replace the Pixie song that he's been using for the last year. And I actually think that the Jefferson Starship song is actually far superior to the Pixie song. And you could disagree, but you would be wrong. So Sean Ross Sapp said that they were hoping to have it done by tonight, but I guess the deal is only about 95% done. So it's going to happen. It's just a matter of when. And I'll be very happy to hear that song on television because I think it's actually a pretty damn good song. So Ospreay entered with Aussie Open, and he had the Rev Pro heavyweight title around his waist while they introduced him as the IWGP US champion. They showed Juice Robinson with the US belt up in the Bullet Club box. He was hanging out up there with El Fantasmo. Ospreay slowed down the pace, and this was a match also I was looking forward to on the show. And I know a lot of people, they don't like Orange Cassidy. They shit on everything he does, and they probably thought this was going to be just all comedy, and this was going to be all garbage. And what I love about it is that by the time this match was over, those people were all made to look like fools. And those people will still insist that they're right, and they're not the fool. But usually when somebody is made to look like a fool, they're so embarrassed that they can't bring themselves to admit that they were in fact the fool. And I think that's a lot of what you're going to be seeing a lot of that. So Ospreay slowed down the pace. He locked on an abdominal stretch, and then he put his hand in Cassidy's pocket and he pulled out the middle finger. Mega heat. I thought that was a fucking great spot. You could tell the exact moment that Taz fell in love with Will Ospreay as a wrestler on commentary during this match. That was great. Ospreay hit a bunch of Kawada kicks to Cassidy. Cassidy, though, fired up, and he hit Ospreay with a drop kick. Cassidy hit his own low impact version of the Kawada kicks. And all that did was piss off Ospreay, because he's getting these ridiculous kicks, right? No effort or energy behind them. And Cassidy then caught Ospreay with a super kick, and then he unleashed his inner Kawada, and he started laying those fucking kicks in. Cassidy avoided the Os Cutter. And this is also, honestly, one of my favorite moments of the match. He went for the Os Cutter, and all Orange Cassidy did was he just kind of, it reminded me of Samoa Joe. We saw him do this a lot in the TNA days, where somebody would go to do a dive or a splash or some kind of a move off the ropes. And all Joe would do is he would just walk away. He would just sidestep it and walk away. And he would have this like disappointed look on his face like, no. Orange Cassidy just sidestepped it. And Ospreay just crashed down on his back. So didn't quite connect with the Os Cutter. Then he countered a suplex, did OC, into a Stun Dog Millionaire. Cassidy took out Aussie open on the floor when they tried to interfere. And then he hit a diving DDT off the top rope. He caught Ospreay, hooked his head, and drilled him into the mat. Got a near fall out of that. Cassidy and Ospreay, they fought up to the corner. And Cassidy sent Ospreay forward head first. There was a camera that was mounted on top of the ring post. And occasionally during the pay-per-view, they would cut to a shot from that camera. So you get like this bird's eye view. Well, he shoved Ospreay head first, and it made a great sound. And he smashed him head first right into the camera. He almost knocked the camera clear off the ring post. I mean, he fucked the whole camera up. And the camera was, you know, tilted backwards, and Ospreay's just, you know, he's all dazed and confused. Ospreay, though, he came back. He did eventually, he recovered after a beach break. So Orange Cassidy did hit the beach break, got a very close near fall, but couldn't get three. So Ospreay came back with the Os Cutter for a near fall of his own, and he went for the Hidden Blade. Cassidy avoided it. Ospreay went for the Stormbreaker. Cassidy countered with a Rana into a cradle for another near fall. Ospreay finally connected, finally connected with the Hidden Blade, smashed him right in the back of the head. But they'd only got two, and the crowd went nuts. And they zoomed in on Ospreay's face, and he had this just shocked expression. Like, he could not believe that this fucker kicked out of the Hidden Blade. So he went right into the Stormbreaker. And he got the pin. See, I would have done it the opposite way. Because the Hidden Blade looks like a legitimately devastating finish. So if anything, I would have had him hit the Stormbreaker and have OC kick out, but then finish him off with the Hidden Blade. But that's just me. I would say Orange Cassidy shut a lot of people up tonight, but I'm sure they're going to continue to spew their drivel. Will Ospreay is... We already knew this. Will Ospreay is one of the best in the entire world. I mean, he is just on another level. When, you know, bell to bell in that ring, he is just absolutely on another level. But Orange Cassidy more than held his own. I don't want to make it sound like this was all Will Ospreay and Orange Cassidy just kind of hung with him. I mean, these two went in there and had an excellent match. It was not the opponent that I would have envisioned for him if I was putting this card together. There's probably five other names I could have come up with before I would have landed on Orange Cassidy, maybe more than five. But that's the match that Tony Khan booked. Again, Andrade had claimed that originally it was going to be him and Will Ospreay, which would have been weird because it would have been heel against heel. That's what he claimed. Tony Khan has said that this was the match that has, you know, been in the works for a while. So maybe the truth is somewhere in the middle. You know, who knows? But we know why Andrade and Penta and Ray Phoenix were not allowed to be on the show, because New Japan has a long-standing partnership with CMLL, and CMLL has been at war with AAA for 30 years, and so it gets a little politically dicey. So there were some people missing from... That's why when Pac won the All-Atlantic title, his Death Triangle buddies didn't come out to celebrate with him, because they weren't there. Or if they were, they were in the back. They were not allowed to be on the show tonight. I guess it would have caused an international incident. I don't know, but anyway. This was another in a long line of excellent matches up and down this main card, and the last 7 or 8 minutes in particular of this match were fantastic. This was one of my favorite matches on the entire show. After the match, Aussie Open, they double-teamed Cassidy. They were beating him up. Rocky Romero and Trent Barretta. Trent looked like he was limping down to the ring. They ran in to try to make the save. They got laid out. All of a sudden, we hear theme music, and we see on the screen it says Katsuyori Shibata's name. And he got a very nice reaction. Here comes Shibata. The surprise appearance by Shibata. And he comes out. He takes his shirt off. He's in his gear. Aussie Open. They charge down the aisle to go after him. And Shibata takes them both out with kicks. He gets in the ring. He takes Ospreay down with a pump kick. Shibata hit the corner dropkick on Ospreay. He went for the rear naked choke, but Aussie Open dragged Ospreay out to safety. And Shibata and Orange Cassidy, they had a standoff. And Cassidy gave Shibata his sunglasses. He put the sunglasses on him. He gave him the thumbs up. So it was great to see Shibata. Anytime we get to see Shibata is okay in my book. I remember the first time when he came back and he made that cameo appearance. It was on a, I don't remember what New Japan show it was. It was a few years ago. But just the reaction that he got when he came out and that corner drop kick, it might have been on Kenta. When he hit that corner drop kick on Kenta, oh, he fucking wrecked that guy with that. But just think of where he was 5 years ago, right? It was 5 years ago when he suffered that brain injury in the match with Okada and almost died and had to have brain surgery and, you know, his vision was all fucked. And I mean, it was really bad there for a while. That's how he ended up at the LA Dojo, you know, running the dojo and being the coach. And so he found a different way to contribute. But now we've seen him back to do like a couple of exhibition type stuff. And I don't know if this is going to lead to anything, but again, it got a nice reaction and it was very cool. I was not expecting to see him on the show. So all of this was very cool. Zack Sabre Jr. was out next to take on Bryan Danielson's hand-picked mystery opponent. Bryan Danielson, one of the walking wounded in AEW right now. He was not able to be part of the show. And he was the one that I was looking forward to seeing the most in the ring against the New Japan contingent. So I was pretty pissed off when I found out that he was not going to be on the show. But what are you going to do? The guy's hurt. So he legitimately handpicked his replacement. That's what I have read. I'm sure Tony Khan was interested in bringing Cesaro into AEW because why the hell would he not be? But apparently this was truly a handpicked opponent by Bryan Danielson, someone who Bryan Danielson is friends with and has great respect and admiration for. And when he had some creative power in his final year in WWE, used part of it to help give Cesaro that last big push that he got in his time in WWE. And the reason that Cesaro got that one pay-per-view main event against Roman Reigns, he could probably thank Bryan Danielson for that. So you know that Danielson has a great deal of admiration and respect for this guy. And the way that he talked about who the mystery man was going to be and the way he built him up on TV on Wednesday, in my mind, it could be nobody else. And I heard all the other names from Jonathan Gresham to Johnny Gargano to Timothy Thatcher to, I mean, again, people were mentioning so many different names. The only name that made sense was the man who walked out on this show. So they're building it up. Who's it going to be? Who's it going to be? And they had the camera on the crowd. So we couldn't see who it was at first, but they could see on the screen the name Claudio. And you just saw the arena just come unglued. These people in the United Center went nuts for this guy. It truly felt like it was not the CM Punk reaction last summer, but it was one level below that. Like, he blew the roof off the place. Once people realized, and they probably knew it was going to be him, and they were hoping it was going to be him, and when they knew it was him, they gave him a tremendous ovation. And it said Claudio Castagnoli. That's the name that he used in Ring of Honor before he went to WWE. That's the name he's going to go by here in AEW. And he is now also officially the newest member of the Blackpool Combat Club, because not only was he Bryan Danielson's handpicked opponent, he is now part of the group with Danielson and Moxley. And of course, Regal is leading the charge and Wheeler Yuta is in the group. And now Claudio is in the group as well. I was going to be very disappointed if it was anybody else. Very disappointed. So once I knew for sure that it was him, and again, I could probably thank Dave fucking Meltzer for blowing the surprise before the match. I agree with the people in the chat from earlier. I don't know what the fuck Dave was thinking, why he would tweet that before the match, you know, before these guys even came out. But I already knew. It could only be one guy. And look, WWE's loss is going to be AEW's gain. I know WWE did not want to lose him. A lot of people in WWE really liked him. Management, the talent, they loved him. He was there for over a decade. One of the most well-respected and well-liked members of that entire roster. They did not want to lose Cesaro. It came down, I think, to business. His contract was coming due. And, you know, my understanding is that he probably had a certain number in mind and they were not willing to pay him what he wanted to be paid. I think it came down to money more than anything else. They just could not meet at the appropriate number. His contract expired. And he's been laying low because once his contract expired, I mean, he was free to go wherever he wanted. He could have showed up on AEW television the very next week. But I think his contract expired in February. He's been laying low. He's been taking his time. I always thought it was possible he would go back to WWE and they would work something out. I mean, God knows they could fucking use him on SmackDown right now. They could use another solid babyface on that roster now that Ricochet is dead. So I half expected him to show back up on SmackDown any week. Their loss is AEW's gain. And really, I like it also because it just gives him so many new opponents to work with. So many new people to work with that he either has never worked with before or that he has not worked with in probably over 10 years. It's just a fresh coat of paint, a new lease on life for him now in wrestling. It's just something different than going back to the same old, same old. It's one of the reasons why, you know, there was a period years ago where I at the time was kind of excited to see, is Dolph Ziggler going to leave? Now I can't bring myself to give a shit. I mean, it's comical, but at the time there was still some life left in Dolph Ziggler. And I thought, this is a guy who should leave and go somewhere else. And this is before AEW was a thing. So I don't even know where he would have went. He probably would have just went to Impact. But sometimes a change of scenery and just stepping away. Yeah, you've probably heard the expression, how can I miss you if you're never gone? Yeah, there's a lot of truth in that. But, you know, guys like Ziggler and Sheamus and Cesaro, I mean, they were around in that company, hovering around that mid-card for the most part, mid to upper card, but mostly mid-card, for so many years. And they wrestled the same people over and over and over and over and over again. That sometimes the only thing to do is leave. That's what Drew McIntyre got fired, but he left. And he built himself back up. He built himself into a main event player. Sometimes it helps to just leave and go away and then maybe eventually come back. But as I said, their loss is now AEW's gain. So Claudio comes in there. And he immediately catches Zack Sabre with a running uppercut right out of the gate and tried for the immediate win with the neutralizer. They had me convinced. They had me convinced there, but Sabre kicked out and he rolled out to the floor, which kind of makes sense. You know, if you apply the video game logic, right? If I were playing 2K22, let's say, although I guess I wouldn't be able to hit my finish anyway until I'd have to build up to it, but yeah, if you hit your finishing move on somebody too early in the match, if you haven't taken the time to wear down your opponent, then you're probably not going to win, right? Because you have to wear them down first. So it kind of makes sense that Sabre kicked out. So Claudio caught him with a running forearm against the railing outside, and a second one backfired. He ran his arm into the railing, and so began the story of the match. And Sabre worked over the injured arm. There was a tremendous spot. This was the best, where Claudio deadlifted him up with his one good arm. He had him outside on the floor, and Sabre had some kind of a submission hold applied. He muscled this fucking guy up. Now, Zack Sabre, I mean, he looks like a fucking string bean, but he muscled him up with his one good arm up onto his shoulder, and he walked all around over to the ring steps, up the ring steps, onto the apron, and then deposited him into the ring with a powerbomb. I'm telling you, this guy's a freak of nature. He is deceptively strong. Why do you think I always used to talk about that Brock match? It would have been fun just to have somebody who could actually throw that guy around because we weren't used to seeing that. I still can't believe they never went to that. So there were so many uppercuts in this match, I lost count. And I'd be surprised if Sabre didn't lose some teeth. Claudio teased the giant swing twice, but Sabre avoided it. He got caught with it on the third attempt. Only managed about five or six rotations, though, because he was selling the injured shoulder. So he had to let go. Claudio went for the sharpshooter. Instead, Sabre countered into a heel hook. Claudio used his strength to turn the hold over. He applied a sharpshooter. Sabre broke the hold, so Claudio gave him the double stomp to the chest. In the end, Claudio hit the pop-up uppercut, won with the Ricola bomb. Haven't seen that in a long time. This is a very different match from the others on the show. I thought it worked. Again, if it comes down to your personal taste. Zack Sabre Jr., I think, is an acquired taste for a lot of people. He's a very good technical, you know, wrestler in terms of the different moves and the submissions. He's an annoying little fucker, is what he is. But he's very good at what he does. And Cesaro can work a lot of different styles. We got to see him work a technical style on this show. On Wednesday, he's going to go in there in a War Games match and beat the fuck out of people. And I love it. But these two worked very well together. I enjoyed this. I thought this was a great technical match that told a story based around the injured arm. And Claudio is going to be part of Blood and Guts this coming Wednesday on Dynamite. He is now. Well, Eddie Kingston's not going to be very happy about that. If you know, you know. Eddie Kingston does not like Claudio Castagnoli. Wink, wink. But I just think he's such a great fit for this group. If they were going to add another member to the Blackpool Combat Club, I mean, come on. This guy is a gimme, right? He fits in this group like a glove. And I think it's going to help him, too, because I have the same concerns that probably, you know, some of you have, or maybe a lot of you have, which is that, well, he's just going to get lost in the shuffle. He'll be the next Keith Lee, who ends up on the buy-in on the all-out pre-show in a few months, or the full gear pre-show, right? I think it helps him being a part of this group, which is another reason why I like him being associated with this faction, right? It doesn't hurt to be in the same group that also just so happens to have the new world champion. You got John Moxley in there. You got Bryan Danielson. Regal is part of that group. They've been getting a lot of time on television. Danielson, not recently because he's been hurt, but before that, they were getting television time every week, right? They're some of the biggest stars in the company. How does that hurt Claudio to be associated with that? So the longer he can stay as part of this group, the better off he's going to be. More so than some of these other ex-WWE guys that have come in on their own and in some cases have just sort of faded into the background because there's only so many television segments to go around. I don't think that's going to be as much of an issue for Claudio. I think that works to his advantage, and I like that. I like that aspect of it as well. And don't forget, we still have a match waiting down the road, whether it happens here or in Japan. Bryan Danielson is going to get healthy. He's going to come back, and he's going to get his match with Zack Sabre Jr. I just like the idea that maybe a year from now, when we're talking about the G1, because it's kind of disappointing to me that we only have one AEW guy in the G1 this year, and it's Lance Archer, he's a New Japan guy. I mean, he's always going to be a New Japan. All the years he spent there, he's a New Japan guy. There's no real AEW stars in the G1 this year. And they've expanded it. They have so many more people in the tournament this year. It's kind of shocking to me, frankly, that Lance Archer is the only AEW representative in the tournament. But it has me thinking maybe a year from now, imagine if we can get Bryan Danielson and maybe Claudio in that tournament. I know it's tough because it's a grueling schedule and it takes them away from AEW television, but in a perfect world, if we can get Claudio and Danielson both in the G1, that'd be pretty fucking cool. We had the four-way for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship with Switchblade Jay White defending against the former champion Kazuchika Okada, Hangman Adam Page, and Adam Cole. The introductions for each man that gave this a big fight feel. Okada got the biggest reaction out of everybody as soon as the coin drop. As soon as the coin drop was heard, he got a superstar reaction. And all four men got a standing ovation. They got holy shit chants before they even touched. My first thought when I realized who was the referee for this match is that they're really taking a chance putting this match in the hands of all the referees that they could have put in this match, they gave this match to Rick Knox, also known as the Young Bucks referee, because he pretty much referees most, if not all, of their matches. He's always made to look like a fucking moron. Probably the worst referee in all of AEW. And they put him in charge here in this match. And I thought, boy, you're taking a real risk here. And as it turned out, we had a finish that didn't exactly go, I don't think, went according to plan. And it may not have been his fault, but I like to just blame him anyway. So we could all just blame Rick Knox for the finish. Cole tried to make a deal with his buddy Jay White to work together early on here at the beginning of this match against the Babyfaces. So a lot of the early part of this match, you had Okada working with White. You had Paige working with Cole. Okada dropkicked Cole off the turnbuckles at one point, took the fight out to the floor, and Okada tossed both Jay White and Adam Cole into the front row. They had cleared out some of the seats. And so Cole and White are out in the crowd, and Okada backs up. We've seen him do this spot a million times on New Japan shows. And he starts clapping, and he's getting the crowd into it, right? And he builds up a head of steam, and here he comes, and he charges in and does a big dive out over the guardrail onto the heels. The alliance with Cole and White did not last very long. Adam Cole turned on him and hit a backstabber, which is a very appropriately named move for such a thing, actually. I don't know if that was by design or what, but I actually think that was the perfect move to use. Cole stopped the buckshot lariat from Hangman, who came off the top with, after that, with an Orihara moonsault to the floor on Okada and Cole. Ghetto was out there. He tried to interfere. Hangman countered a Blade Runner attempt into a Deadeye, dropped it right on his head. Okada broke up what looked to be a Hangman title win after he nailed Jay White with the buckshot lariat. That led to an exchange with Hangman and Okada. Hangman downed him with a discus lariat and set up for the buckshot, but Adam Cole sent Page into the ring post instead. Cole tried for the Panama Sunrise to Okada, but Okada turned it into an air raid crash across his knee. Okada hit a top rope elbow drop, got some good hang time on it too. It was a good-looking elbow drop. We got the Rainmaker pose, and the camera zoomed out. I wish I could do that with mine. I couldn't set up the effect, but we had the Rainmaker pose and the camera zoom out. Hangman got back inside. Cole dropped him with a super kick and caught Okada with one as well for a near fall. Hangman again tried for a buckshot lariat. There were like 12 different buckshot attempts in this match. It was ridiculous. Don't die. But there were a lot of buckshot attempts in this match. Probably 5 too many, I'm going to say. Buckshot lariat attempts here in this match. Brian Alvarez just tweeted, this is from Darlene in the chat, that the belief is that Adam Cole may have a concussion. And that would make total sense, because I even put that in my notes. I said it looked like he got his bell rung. And we're going to get to that here in a second, because we're coming up on the finish here. But he went for a buckshot. He got super kicked by Adam Cole off the apron. Okada caught Cole with a Michinoku driver. He tried for the Rainmaker, but Cole ducked it. And Jay White came back in. He caught Okada with the Blade Runner, and then he opted to pin Adam Cole instead of Okada, to win the match and retain the IWGP title. Even though there was no reason, theoretically, there was no reason for Adam Cole not to kick out. Nothing was really done to him. But he pinned Adam Cole. Jay White said something to the referee. He got in Rick Knox's ear. He was saying something to him, and he went to go leave. The Young Bucks came out. They walked right past Jay White, who just passed him right by and walked back through the tunnel. And the Bucks came down to check on Adam Cole. Excalibur made it a point, while they were showing replays from the entire match, Excalibur made a comment that Adam Cole, you know, while they were showing the replays, had gotten up on his own power and walked to the back. Now, the announcers tried to explain that Cole collapsed and he wasn't, you know, ducking the Rainmaker, because it looked like he ducked the Rainmaker. And I think what happened is Cole was supposed to take the Rainmaker. This is just from what I saw and what I can gather. Here's what I believe happened. Adam Cole was supposed to take the Rainmaker and didn't want to because he knew he was hurt. I don't know where the injury would have happened, but he did look woozy. He did look like maybe he got his bell rung. And part of the reason I believe that is because when Jay White went to pin him for the finish, and the reason why this finish sucked and just looked completely off is because you can see on the replay, Adam Cole got a shoulder up or tried to get a shoulder up. That's why a lot of people looked at it and said, wait, was that a botch? Was that a referee botch? Like, what happened here? It looked like he was getting his shoulder up. He probably didn't have his wits about him. If he was concussed, you know, he might not have even known where the fuck he was. So that's what I think happened. And unfortunately, you know, it made for a very uneventful finish. I don't think it ruined the match. I mean, there were some people on Twitter saying, oh, ruined the whole match. I think that's a fucking stupid comment to make. Outside of that finish, I thought these four had an excellent match. And to me, the last 3 seconds of the fucking thing doesn't ruin the entire 15 to 20 minutes that came before it. But it did make for a very flat finish, which is unfortunate. I mean, there's no way around it. It made for a flat ending to what I thought otherwise was an excellent match. And if Adam Cole is hurt, then it makes all the sense in the world why it came off the way that it did. So, but again, we could always just blame Rick Knox. We could always blame Rick Knox. That was a thing from South Park years ago, right? Blame Canada. Just blame Canada for everything. Let's blame Rick Knox. Why not? Right? In the end, it's probably going to be his fault anyway. A very unfortunate finish, but what led up to it, I thought, was excellent. And Jay White is still the IWGP Heavyweight Champion because they were not going to take the title off of him so soon after he won it. Then we had Jon Moxley challenging Hiroshi Tanahashi for the interim AEW World Championship. Moxley is a big fan of Tanahashi, and he has wanted this match with Tanahashi for years. He's wanted this match with him for a very long time. He's been chasing him, you know, in storyline, in Japan. No, Tanahashi, you're ducking me. And even when some of this interplay started between the AEW side and the New Japan side, and we started getting some New Japan cameos on Dynamite, you know, Moxley was calling out Tanahashi. And Jon Moxley was not aware up until recently of the fact that Tony Khan numerous times blocked New Japan's attempts to book a singles match between Jon Moxley and Hiroshi Tanahashi. And Moxley was not aware of this. And when Moxley found out about it, because Tony Khan was kind of laughing about it, yeah, you know, I blocked it. I got in the way of it because, you know, and it makes sense why. He wanted to make sure that AEW was part of that because he felt that was such a big match. We have to be involved in some way. Whether it happens in AEW or whatever the case may be, we have to be involved. I'm not going to let them take that match. But he was very cavalier about it. And Jon Moxley knew nothing about this. And so when he found out about it, he was not very happy. As fate intervened, again, he was going to be in the opening match originally. He ended up being in the main event when CM Punk went down with the foot injury. And so he ends up getting his match anyway. But if Punk doesn't get hurt, it's not like Tony Khan was going to book the match on this show either. So I don't know when he was planning on doing Tanahashi and Moxley. I mean, is he going to wait until Tanahashi is, you know, 60 years old? How much longer was he going to wait? As things turned out, though, we got the match tonight. Moxley hit a Uranage to Tanahashi through the timekeeper's table. Tanahashi barely got up off the ground for the rock bottom, but again, he's got the Keiji Muto knees, so he can't necessarily move around the way that he used to. But Tanahashi, he ended up making it back into the ring. And I like the mention on commentary. I think it was Kevin Kelly who pointed out that normally in New Japan, they have a 20 count. And that was not the case tonight. They were using the traditional 10 count. And so Tanahashi had to make sure he, you know, adhered to the 10 count and got back into the ring in time. It would not be a Jon Moxley match without there being some kind of plunder. It would not be a Jon Moxley match without blood. And we got both here in this match. I don't know where it happened, but Moxley got badly cut open on top of his head. He was bleeding all over the place. It was leaking out of his head. And they mentioned on commentary that it may have been from some stomps that Tanahashi at one point was laying in on him. So that may have been where it happened. I didn't see it. But Moxley was bleeding like a fucking hog here in this match. And the whole by the time this match was over, the whole mat was drenched. It looked like the end of a UFC fight or something. Tanahashi hit the high fly flow off the top onto Moxley on the floor, took him down. Back inside, Tanahashi hit the twist and shout. Moxley took him over with a released German and then hit a paradigm shift for a close near fall. A little too close. Moxley laid in the hammer and anvil elbows. Tanahashi, though, came back and hit a headbutt and a knee strike to the face. Tanahashi headed up top. He hit the high cross body to take Moxley down. Went right back up to the top rope with Moxley now down on the mat. And he hit the high fly flow. He went for the pin. Moxley, though, kicked out. He transitioned into the bulldog choke. Tanahashi got out of it. He tried for a jackknife pin, but Moxley kicked out. Moxley annihilated him with a King Kong lariat. Tanahashi kicked out from it at one. He got the super kick out. And the crowd came alive at that point. More hammer and anvil elbows by Moxley. And the crowd booed. They booed Jon Moxley. They wanted Tanahashi to beat Jon Moxley. That surprised me. Not that Tanahashi would have fans and would get respect from the audience, but, you know, I didn't get the sense coming into this match that people were in any way against Moxley or anything. The way the match played out, because Moxley was the one who was bleeding and everything, and so you would imagine, if anything, if anybody would have sympathy in this match, that it might be him, because he was the one who was bleeding from the head and everything. No. They wanted Tanahashi to win. And there were loud chants of go Ace for Tana. Moxley lifted him up for the Death Rider DDT. And finally, he got the three count. And Jon Moxley, a very bloody Jon Moxley, becomes the first ever two-time AEW world champion. Jericho and Daniel Garcia, they came out to attack both men. Eddie Kingston came out. He went right for Jericho. But he got smothered in the process. Wheeler Yuta ran out. Santana and Ortiz, they all ran down to provide the assist. Out comes the rest of the Jericho Appreciation Society. That paved the way for Claudio to come back out. And he went right for Jericho, caught him with a pop-up uppercut. He was hitting everybody with running uppercuts. William Regal is here. He comes walking down. He got a big smile on his face. He likes what he sees. Claudio closed things out with a giant swing to Angelo Parker. He got a lot more revolutions than he did earlier. They claimed 20. I don't know if it was 20 or not, but it was a lot. And that is how they went off the air. I could have done without the Dynamite ending to the show. I really wish they would have just ended it with Tanahashi and Moxley shaking hands. And then just Moxley celebrating his title win. Or even if you want to send the other Blackpool Combat Club members out there to celebrate with him and Regal and everything, that'd be fine. I know what they were trying to do here. They wanted to remind people, hey, we got a big Blood and Guts show on TV this Wednesday, so don't forget. I just thought it was overkill, you know? I mean, Dynamite went off the air with a giant brawl on Wednesday. Rampage went off with a giant brawl on Friday. Did we really need another fucking brawl at the end of this pay-per-view? It was a total TV ending to this show. I could have done without that ending. The ending aside, there was not a single bad match on this entire main pay-per-view card. Not even counting the pre-show, because the pre-show was meh. I'm talking about the main card. Not a single bad match on the entire show. I had fun watching this. This show is exactly what I expected it to be. And they could not deliver on some of the matches that they wanted to do because the injuries just ravaged the show. So they worked with what they had. There were still some very strong matches on paper coming into the show. And all of those matches that I was looking forward to, they delivered. And so I have no complaints, really, as far as any of that goes. I feel like I got what I paid for. And I'll reiterate what I said at the beginning of the stream. This is, here as I say this, it's June 27th. We're right at the halfway point of this year, okay? We're just slightly past the halfway point. This is the best show, top to bottom, of 2022. Forbidden Door was an excellent show. And I hope that they will do this again. I would like to see this become a once annual thing. I do not think we need to see this more than once. If there's going to be another, you know, later in the year or something, it needs to be in Japan. They could do something over there if they wanted to, but I think once a year is fine. I never had an issue with them catering to their hardcore base of fans and giving them something like this to look forward to, because I'm part of that base. You know, people talk about these casual fans or whatever. What about them? I don't give a fuck. And it's okay to give your diehard hardcore fans who are supporting your product something like this every now and then that they can really get excited for, because it's fun. Because we don't get to see this all the time. WWE is the biggest company in the world, and it's just not how they operate. They don't do stuff like this because they don't have to. That's why they don't do it. They don't play well with others. As a fan, though, it's fun to see the interaction sometimes between the two companies. So you, maybe you're not a fan of New Japan, and maybe you don't know a lot of the talent, and I can understand that. But I think that Tony Khan, he knew what he was doing when he put the show together. He wanted to give those diehard fans something to get excited about, and they got very excited about it to the tune of an immediate sellout on day one when tickets went on sale for the biggest NBA building in the country. And as you saw tonight, they had a packed building. Over 17,000 people in the United Center. Over $1 million gate. Second biggest gate in the history of the company behind last month's pay-per-view. And now they're coming back to Arthur Ashe Stadium in a few months, and they're going to try to get another 20,000 people in the building on that night, and they'll try to hit $1 million again. So all things considered, I would call this show a success, which, again, is saying something, because this show was plagued from day one. They managed to put on what I thought was the best show of the entire year. Check out the Twitter poll. 90% of you, 90.2%, have voted thumbs up, and 9.8% thumbs down. So pretty good score. 1,200 votes in, almost 1,300 votes in so far. So go ahead and give it a vote. Let me know what you thought of the show at Solomonster on Twitter. Fictional name. What's going on? He just got back from the United Center. He said pretty great show overall. Yeah, I would imagine, you know, to be in the building live for that would have been a lot of fun. They were very loud. Most of the matches on this show, but especially there was all the key stuff, the big spots in the main matches, Claudio coming out, that kind of stuff. The crowd was pretty hot throughout the entire show. Uffman wants to know, what is the beef between Claudio and Kingston? It's kind of an inside thing. Yeah, they don't hate each other. But Eddie Kingston is a very convincing man. So whenever you bring up the name Claudio Castagnoli, he goes off on him like he, you know, fucking bitch slapped his mother or something. I don't think there's any actual legitimate heat between the two of them. You're making me break kayfabe here. I don't like to break kayfabe. Let's take a look at your super chats. Spicy Dried Chicken with a double super chat. Yuta Plex City has been born in Chicago. And I love it when New Japan heel talent piss off the American crowds like a hornet's nest. Justin with the $9.99. Driving back to Decatur, Illinois. Yes, Decatur, Illinois, after being in attendance in the United Center. Thanks for all you do, and get well soon. Thank you, Justin. Alex Jimenez with the $12 super chat. I want to give Solomonster a haircut, haha. I'm in barber school. I hope you're feeling better, friend. Thank you, Alex. You want to give me a haircut, huh? Dry chicken without flavor, blood and guts will be the last show. I'll be watching AEW before taking a break. Well, I know you're a big New Japan fan, so that's it. You're done now. You've gotten your fill. Maybe they'll do another one next year. You'll come back. Joshua Bonfield, were the past budget cuts made so WWE could afford a $3 million hush money? It has made me wonder if that's why WWE have let go of top-tier guys. No, that is not why. I assure you that is not why.
Moo. Moo.
Stephen Chappa. Coming in with a $100 moo super chat. Says, I'm back. Great show tonight. Feel better solo. It's not my favorite $30 super chat, but you deserve way more. Yeah, usually I see Steven coming in with that $30 Bully the Clown super chat, but holy shit, he came in with a hundy bomb. Holy crap, Steven, thank you. Awesome. Frank Aquilino, $9.99 super chat. Ospreay and Orange Cassidy was the best match of the night. I think you may be right. Zack Sabre Jr. looked great. He definitely put on some muscle. Him and Claudio had a great match. You know, I think I might go with Will Ospreay and Orange Cassidy for best match of the night. That might have been the most fun I had watching all the matches tonight. Shinakuma, thank you for the $4. Appreciate it. Bobby's World 2110. Much love to you, brother. You are the man of the people, and I hope you get better soon. Well, that's very nice of you. Thank you. I appreciate that. I probably had no business even being live on Friday night the way that I sounded. As bad as I still sound, I sounded horrendous on Friday night. I don't sound great now either. But thank you for that. Justin Jack, $5 super chat. It's the end of the month and I'm practically broke after paying for that pay-per-view, but I suppose I can spare a few more bucks for my favorite podcaster. Thank you, sir. Anthony Garland, a few cups of Tetley British Blend tea will knock out that cough. I don't think anything is going to knock out this cough. Cough is brutal. Sound like I'm going to hack up my lung. Cassidy Grooms, I hope you feel better real soon. Thank you, Cassidy. Devin Garcia with the $30 Bully the Clown. I missed that one. $30 Bully the Clown super chat. I must have just talked right over that one. You know, my ears are all plugged up. I'm still very, very congested. With Forbidden Door being in Chicago, Solomonster, you're pulling off an MJ flu game from 97 NBA Finals. This super chat is for all your hard work and the great content you give us on a weekly basis, even during the Rona. I hate missing shows. I hate missing shows. I can't help it. Shinakuma with the $2. Get well, sir. Thanks for being with us tonight. Manic Magician, stay strong and get better soon. Bob the Builder, is it just me, but AEW crowds are the best crowds in wrestling today? I mean, it really depends on where you are. I mean, they're in Chicago tonight. Chicago's always a hot city. Even when WWE is there, typically they're pretty hot when they're in Chicago too. But I think on the whole, in terms of audience reaction, probably AEW, I'd give them the nod over WWE and New Japan. They're not even allowed to make noise still over there, so yeah, I mean I'd probably say AEW. Rocky Road 313, buy, sell, rent, Evolution, Four Horsemen, or Undisputed Era? I mean, how is that even a question? I mean, Four Horsemen. Clearly, I'm going to buy on the Four Horsemen. I'm going to... I'll rent Evolution, and I'll sell on the... Yui is Undisputed Elite. I thought this... Oh, wait, maybe he means Undisputed Era. Yeah. Well, either way, it's Horseman, Evolution, and then Yui. Kevin Velasquez, haven't seen the pay-per-view yet. Just wanted to say I hope you get well soon. You are the man. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you very much. That Joe guy. This was my first AEW pay-per-view. Very good show. Best match of the night, I thought, was Ospreay against Cassidy. My question is, where can you watch the weekly New Japan show? Thank you for all that you do. They're back on Access TV, I believe, right? I believe New Japan is back on Access TV. So not everybody has access, but they are back on there, I believe. And there's also, they have their own streaming service, New Japan World. So you could always, you know, purchase a membership for a month and browse around and just check out some of the content on there. But as far as the weekly show, I think Access TV is your best bet. Magician Sapphire with the 10 spot. Excellent show and best pay-per-view of the year so far, despite it being so cursed. Although, I wish Ibushi got to hit the Rainmaker, but considering injury to Adam Cole, well, I think you mean Okada. I was like, Ibushi? Why would Ibushi hit the Rainmaker? King Bling Blah, All Out 2022 at the United Center, September 4th. Has that been announced, or is that something that you're suggesting? Because I think that would be great. I think it would be crazy for them to run the Now Arena. I said it last year. I said they have outgrown that building. They should not be running that building. If they insist on running in the Chicago area, they have to run the United Center. Otherwise, I would love to see All Out be their Canadian debut up in Toronto. So, I mean, is that something that they announced at the media scrum, or is that just something that you're pitching to me? Because here's the other thing about that. If they're going to run Chicago, they should definitely run the United Center. But they can't keep running Chicago. So you can't do back-to-back pay-per-views like that in Chicago. You got to spread it out and go somewhere else. That's why I suggested Canada. I said they're going to make their Canadian debut soon. Why not do it All Out? Why not bring All Out to Toronto? I would take it completely out of Chicago. That's me. But King Bling Blah in the chat says it's been confirmed. Well, let's check and see here before we go on if that is the case. Let's see if we have any news on All Out coming up in September. Here we go. All Out will be September 4th in Chicago. But they did not announce what venue they will be using, so I don't see that confirmed. So, in fact, I do not believe it is confirmed yet. But if they're going to run Chicago, then it's got to be the United Center. But for the love of God, I mean, you know, come on. you can take it out of Chicago and go somewhere else. I mean, to do back-to-back pay-per-views in Chicago, I think, is ridiculous. Jamin John, Zach Gowen reveals Brock was originally meant to F5 him off the SmackDown fist instead of throwing him down the stairs. I heard that. So Brock originally meant to kill him instead of throwing him down the stairs. I have heard that, yes. That would have been insane. That would have been absolutely insane. Bob the Builder, 3 years ago, FTR were scratching each other's backs. Yes, that wonderful segment with the Usos. Has it really been 3 years? I guess it has been. Liquid Sharingan, I read Archer is not signed to a contract with AEW anymore. I think he is on a per diem type thing. I think the contract expired back in February. Yeah, but my point still stands. I still feel that they should have tried to get a couple of other AEW guys in the G1 this year. Got the expanded field. It would have been nice to see more than just Lance Archer. Dr. Scorpio, Miro could have won if he wasn't mad towards God. Blaming God for the loss, huh? EJ Slemp, Just got back from the show. It was a blast, but those idiot fans fighting in the crowd ruined the whole vibe in the arena for the main event. Yeah, it did look like there was something going on in the crowd. I don't know if it was a fight or somebody got ejected. Something definitely happened. It briefly took the crowd out of things in the main event. Food Hives. Sting comes home from a long day at work, signing autographs, taking pictures with fans, taking Tony Khan's money. He opens the door and he dives into the bed. Yeah. Dives into the shower. Yeah. Guy's going to hurt himself one day. It's too much diving. Jared M. with the $35 super chat. Awesome show, but of course I see all the hate online from the drones. Boggles my mind. You're never going to win them over. There's no point in even worrying about it. Spaghetti. I like Cole fine enough, but if it was Kenny instead of Cole, it would have been an unforgettable match. Jaren Baller. What is the Claudio and Eddie beef? And Ospreay is amazing. Claudio and Eddie Beef, it's all kayfabe. Spaghetti, Jane Fitz Orange, much better than Where Is My Mind. I just think it's a better song. I never saw what the big deal was about that Pixies song. William Sanchez, Orange Cassidy is awesome. He's proven plenty of times he can go with anybody. I would not mind if he wins the TNT title sometime within the next year. Food Hive, I have zero interest in Jericho storylines at all. He has go away heat with me. Every time he's on my screen, I change it as fast as I can because I'm a wizard. Don't make me laugh. I'm going to start coughing. Robert Fox, tonight's show is excellent, and it was the first time I saw Okada live. That man has to be one of the best wrestlers in the world right now. Okada's one of the best wrestlers in the world, period. Are you kidding me? He's one of the best wrestlers of all time. He will go down as one of the all-time greats. Look at his body of work and what he's accomplished. And the guy is barely in his 30s. I mean, how old is Okada right now? I don't have it in front of me. If he could stay injury-free, he's got a whole, second half of his career ahead of him. Yeah, my first time seeing Okada live was the supercard at Madison Square Garden. He was in the main event against Jay White that night. It's definitely an experience. It's definitely an experience to see him live. Food Hive, this was a great show with stand-ins and understudies. I can only imagine what the original card would have been like if everybody was not hurt. Okada is 34. Is he 34? I didn't even think he was 34 yet. So he's 34. And again, all the IWGP titles, but just all the big main events, all the Tokyo Dome main events. I mean, everything, his whole body of work, it just puts things into perspective when you realize how young he still is. Food Hive also says, I love that Kenny said Cody is still in the game. Yes, Cody Rhodes is going to be in the AEW Fight Forever video game when it comes out later this year. He is still in the game. And is it me, or does Zack Sabre Jr. look like a young Tom Brady? I think it's just you. Nayef Alsafar, thank you for the $9.99. Near. Well, I haven't kicked anything. I haven't kicked COVID's ass yet. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. But thank you, brother. Simi Valley with the $10 super chat. Hope you feel better ASAP. Pardon if this is a stupid question, but do you think if Vince McMahon ends up being gone from WWE, they could enter the forbidden door? No. I don't think that changes at all. Steven Chappa, again, that $100 super chat from earlier. You are the man. Thank you, Steve. Dorenzo. Good day, Solomonster. Hope you're well. My question is, since AEW has started till now, what would you consider to be Tony Khan's best booked moment? The Brody Lee tribute show. Very sad, but it's got to be the Brody Lee tribute show. Devin from NJ 2000. Buy or sell, which pickup made more of a difference, Kurt Angle in TNA or Chris Jericho in AEW? Kurt Angle in TNA. Nicholas Olivas with the $4.99 super chat. We know who you want against the Bucks at All Out. Who do you got against Rosa, Pac, and Moxley? Well, if he's back in time, it's going to be Moxley and Punk. So you got Moxley and Punk, you got FTR and the Bucks. Rosa is a little bit tougher because I don't know what the division is going to look like then if let's say Sasha Banks does come in. You know, that upends everything. I mean, that changes everything. It looks like Athena is going to be going after maybe the TBS title. And I still think Chris Statlander should be the one to take that title from Jade Cargill. So maybe she goes after Jade. Maybe Athena challenges Thunder Rosa. And then as far as Pac goes, I don't know. I mean, you can come back to a singles match with Pac and Miro. You could do that. So maybe that. Maybe you do Thunder Rosa and Athena, Pac and Miro, the Bucks and FTR, and then Moxley and Punk in Chicago in the main event. AJ in Virginia, Omega, Vokata, Daniels, what? Oh, I was like, who's Vokata? I'm like, is that some wrestler I've never heard of before? V is for versus. Omega versus Okada, Danielson versus Punk. Iron Man match. All right. Thank you, AJ. I like how you just created a new wrestler, though, the way it's written. Vokata. Nier, do you think AEW will ever run a Middle East show? Not anytime in the near future. I think if that happens, if that ever happens, that's way far off. They haven't even run the UK or Canada yet. So I'm going to say no. And Tim B, I'm in Chicago and was there tonight, and I'm okay if there are less shows in Chicago. My wallet would be thankful. Well, looks like you're getting another one in September. Ty says the guy had vodka on his mind. AJ had vodka on his mind. Vokata. I thought that's what it said. I thought that said Omega, vodka. I couldn't understand what he was saying. Oh, my goodness. We made it. I made it, and my voice did not completely fail me. So I hope I did a decent enough job of bringing you guys up to speed on all the big results tonight. Again, it was a very enjoyable show. I'm glad I watched it. And I am looking forward to Blood and Guts on Wednesday, and we'll see, you know, Claudio will make his Dynamite debut. We've got John Cena is back on Raw tomorrow night. He could not come at a better time because they could certainly use something right now. And Cena alone has resulted in almost 4,000 extra tickets being sold for Raw in Laredo tomorrow night. So, you know, the people are ready for John Cena to come back. So we got that. We have Money in the Bank coming up on Saturday. I'll be live after Money in the Bank as well. Busy week. Hopefully I can get over this because the work doesn't go away. There's a lot of wrestling to watch and a lot of wrestling to review. So since I did not do, even though it's late, since I did not do Be the Booker the other night, I will do it now. So before we head out, let's be the Booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the Booker.
It is time to be the Booker, where we randomly book a men's match, women's match, and tag team match, and I see if I could put together some main event matches that were better than what we saw on television tonight. I think that's going to be impossible to do because this was a pretty kick-ass card. But we always give it the old college try. It doesn't always work out well. We'll give it a shot. We'll start on the men's side. What time is it? It's 2 o'clock in the morning. What's going on here? Who's up booking shows at 2 o'clock in the morning? Me. With COVID. And we begin with Abyss. The Monster Abyss. Do you remember the name of his board with the nails in it that he's holding there in his hand in that photo? I know the answer. I want to see if any of you know the answer. Nobody? Janice. Which, of course, was the name of Dixie Carter's mother, Janice Carter. That is Janice of the board. Let's see who he's going to be stepping into the ring with. It'll be Abyss going one-on-one with the rated R superstar, Edge. I like that match. When Abyss could go and he wasn't physically just shot to hell, Edge against Abyss. That'd be a pretty good match. I'd book that match. That could be a TV main event one week, right? Let's see what we come up with on the women's side. We've got Victoria, the Spider Lady. Victoria going one-on-one with Laurel Van, right? Laurel Van Ness. That's what she was. Laurel Van Ness. I don't like that match. I don't know. I don't like that match. Let's try the tag teams. Let's shake them on up. Let's randomize them all up here and see what we come up with. We begin with... Now, this is a hell of a team. And this is a team that not everybody might be aware of. Jesse Ventura and Adrian Adonis. Right, they were the weren't they the East West Connection? I believe that was their name, the AWA. So we got Ventura, we got Adonis, and they're going to be getting into the ring with I should not be laughing. Sasha Banks and Bayley against Jesse Ventura and Adrian Adonis. There are a few women's teams in here, but unfortunately, we only got one of them, and, well, that's just not a match that's going to put the butts in the seats, I'm afraid. I shall try to do better next time. Yeah, you jinxed it. That's right. Tarkum in the chat, you jinxed it. All right, I'm going to get out of here. That is your Forbidden Door review. I will try to get the audio up as soon as I can tomorrow morning. And I will be back with you Wednesday night, I guess. I'll be live on Wednesday night after Dynamite. We're going to talk Blood and Guts. We got Money in the Bank coming up next weekend. If you missed episode 762 of the podcast, I did do a podcast earlier. And that is up now as well on Spreaker and all the usual platforms. So please go ahead and download and support. And again, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. It does help the video out a lot when you hit that thumbs up. It takes 2 seconds on your way out, and I appreciate that. Again, thank you for all the kind comments and for sticking with me, because it has been a very shitty weekend, but you have made it a little bit more tolerable. So again, have yourselves a great week, and I will see you guys back here on the channel again real soon. Take care, guys.